All right, and good morning, everyone. I hope you're having a good time wherever you are, and the weather is good for you today. A pleasure to bring in Andy Baggerly. We call him Extra Bags with two G's on Twitter. Of course, he covers the Giants and does such a good job for The Athletic. Extra, how are you today?
I'm great, Marty. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I thought of you this week with all the travel, and Susan talked about it last weekend with us. Did you make all the connections and get everywhere you had to get?
You know, the weirdest part for me, and, you know, I think we've all maybe who travel a lot to take a red eye from time to time when you have to. And I've never taken a red eye to Chicago. And the flight from L.A. is a little shorter than from San Francisco, actually. It's a little under 4 hours. So, like, what do you do on a red eye that lasts, like, 3 hours and 45 minutes? You can't, like, take something to knock yourself out. I got to get in a car and drive to Milwaukee once I land. So, yeah, that was that was not the most productive use of my time, but just not off enough to be functional and get to a hotel and knock out a couple more hours here or there. And I'm feeling pretty good, all things considered. So, I mean, part of it is part of the adventure of it is dealing with some of those travel snafus, and when you overcome them, you actually kind of feel pretty good.
Well, I'm amazed how you do it. I really am. Over all these years, the travel to me, the way you guys do it with a good sense of humor. Even Henry Schulman, as long as you don't put a kid in front of him or near him, he does fine on the flights.
Right. Yeah, for him, the overhead bins are for babies, basically. Yeah, that's what he says. But I got to give a shout-out to Susan, actually, because, I mean, she's the road warrior. John Shea will go on a trip or two here or there, but really? The toughest days are when you're on, like, a three-city trip, and you got to travel and then work two of those days. You're up at, you know, 5 a.m., catching a 7 a.m. flight. You might be connecting somewhere. You get in, you're dog-tired, you check in your hotel. If your room's ready, you're lucky, and then, boom, that's when your workday begins. So, you know, she has gone, you know, and she's done it for years and years and years, like I have as well. But I get to pick and choose a little bit. You know, if it's a Pittsburgh-Atlanta trip, I can take Pittsburgh off and go to Atlanta, you know, and sort of make it a little more bearable. And you know, that's because we don't have to write off every game. So, you know, a big hat tip to the people who are still doing, you know, 75-plus road games a year.
I think it's amazing, really, that you guys do it. How did you get from Milwaukee to Chicago? The team took a bus, apparently.
Yeah, well, when I landed at O'Hare, I just rented a car and then drove it up to Milwaukee and, you know, basically rented a hotel room for the previous night so something would be ready for me at 7 a.m. when I got there. And had Evan Wiebeck of the Merck with me in the car and Alex Pavlovich. We sort of made a little carpool out of it and, you know, got a couple hours of sleep, checked out of the hotel, went to the ballpark for the doubleheader. And then after the doubleheader, because it was a day game Friday at Wrigley, I wanted to be in Chicago. So we just drove back to Chicago after game two and dropped off the rental car someplace downtown. And surprisingly, you can park somewhere downtown in Chicago overnight. Did not know I could do that. And so it all worked out.
Very good. Very good. Andy Baggerly with us. It's an important part of the season for you guys, so I'm glad we could take a few minutes to talk about it. What a week for the Giants, though. You know, they got Alex was on it every day. They're 4-0 in September. They're undefeated in September. Then all of a sudden the roof fell in. What happened this week?
That's sort of been what this team has been all about. You know, it's they're 500 or now a little bit below 500, but they've given you just enough of a twinkle here and there. And I think that's because the starting pitching is pretty good, and the starting pitching does not really pitch them out of games very often. And so when they can get their offense clicking a little bit, when they can go a week catching the ball a fairly decent clip, you know, they can rattle off 4 or 5 wins in a row. They can beat, you know, a potential playoff team like the Phillies and sweep them or sweep the Brewers like they did at home. But boy, when that offense starts to go a little bit south, you know, or they start making errors or you start relying a little too heavily on that bullpen, then it can snowball. And so you see a team that basically is good enough to sustain a little bit of a winning streak, but not good enough to stem the tide of a losing streak. And that's pretty much a recipe for playing 500. You know, and I think maybe it's covered up a little bit because they hit some homers and scored some runs at Dodger Stadium. But, you know, they did do that when it was 99 degrees and the ball was flying. So, you know, who knows how many of David Villar's home runs in L.A. would have gone out in a regular old night game there or another ballpark. So, you know, if you assume that maybe some of those homers weren't homers in L.A., then you start really going back a ways, and you look at how this offense has really been sort of struggling for a sustained period of time now.
Well, I looked it up this morning. They've used 35 players on the offense. Now, of course, you only use, 10 or 12 at a time. They've used 35 on the offense, and when you look at the list, they brought in a lot of people just for a very short time, and then bang, they're gone. And here we go again with Austin Dean coming up.
Yeah, well, and they're just facing a lot of lefties, you know, three left-handed starters in L.A., and they don't have Austin Slater. They just don't have a lot of right-handed bats. And, you know, they do have Evan Longoria back, and boy, you know, he can still make a difference. He can still make a big swing in a game. Yeah, he did it, you know, yesterday, hitting that big double that almost got him back in the game. So, but yeah, they're definitely a little bit light on the right-handed bats. And that's been an issue when they faced these run of lefties lately. And I think that's why you see Austin Dean, because it's basically next man up. Let's see if we can find somebody who can give us a spark.
Yep, 35 players on the offense this year. I think it's – and 25 pitchers. They've used 60 players this year, which
hey,
I think is –
look at Sacramento. Sacramento's used about 90 players this season all told. I mean, that's ridiculous. I don't know how Dave Brundage keeps everyone's name straight.
I know, and that's probably – well, we'll talk about this a little bit. Why not now? And I said this week. It's kind of the way they like to do it. You know, I think there's a comfort zone for Gabe Kapler and for Farhan to do all the platooning and to have everything scripted out. We know what Joe Maddon said this week. Have everything sort of scripted out for them before the game. Who's going to come in here? Who's going to pinch it here? And I think maybe that's just the way they like to do it. And I think maybe it's a dream to think they're going to get five or six players who would just be everyday players. It's a comfort zone for them to operate like this, and that's why they bring in 60 players.
Well, you know, I think they realize that they can get the most out of what they have. You know, if you have somebody who could be exposed as an everyday player, well, you don't expose them. You try to maximize what you can get out of them by using them in concert with others. And, you know, I think that's always going to be your plan B. Even if you're a team that, you know, you might label a team as being very, very platoon happy, I think that almost anybody would tell you they would rather have Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and Trey Turner, you know, as the top three hitters in your lineup. You know, until the Giants can either produce those players or otherwise acquire those players, you know, this is sort of how they have to roll it. I mean, the alternative is, you know, you're going to see like what we saw in the late innings when they didn't have matchups. And it was J.D. Davis against a righty. It was Mike Yastrzemski against a lefty in the ninth. And it was a couple of outs, you know. So, you know, I don't think the answer is, well, just let them play every day and see what happens. I think that you're probably not going to be happy with the results. And they know that these players are not perfect. And, you know, the goal is to develop and acquire the players who is no doubt your best option, no matter, you know, if Sandy Koufax is on the mound. So that's not where they're at. And you could say, well, they should be further along, or they should be spending more, or, you know, they should have developed a player or two like that. And, you know, we are in year four of Farhan's five-year contract. So, I mean, yeah, all of that scrutiny, I think, is fair. But, you know, to say that they shouldn't be platooning with their current personnel, I think, is a little short-sighted.
No, absolutely. They should platoon because that's what they have. And I guess my point is they like it. They like doing this. And it's 4 years in, and they've not developed one everyday player or even signed one everyday player. So that's my point. I think they like it. I think this is the way they do it. And I'd be surprised if they left this template. And, of course, they could if the minor leaguers come through, but I think this is the way they like to do it. It's their comfort zone. So, all right.
I think comfort is the exact word I was about to say. I think they're comfortable doing it. I don't think they necessarily like doing it. They'd much rather have those everyday players. But, you know, it's kind of like when the teams will use the openers and try to use bullpen games, and they'd much rather have DeGrom, Scherzer, guys who can throw 200 innings of, you know, just absolutely dominant baseball. But when you don't have those guys, you got to scheme a little bit.
Well, we'll see if they come up with them. This is, as you say, year four, and it hasn't happened yet. All right, a story to be continued. Andy Baggerly with us, always a pleasure. Andy, what a week for Lewis Brinson, though. Now, this is a guy who I think he's on the team. I think he's someone that they love. He can hit left-handed pitching. He's athletic. He can run. Every time he hits a ground ball, he almost beats it out. and he looks like he can play center field. I think Lewis Brinson showed enough this week. He's not going anywhere.
You know, I tend to agree with you, Marty. It's so easy to be, I don't want to sound cruel, but kind of dismissive of new people who come on the scene or are picked up from someone else's AAA, flotsam and jetsam. Like, okay, they're going to be, you know, gone or DFA'd within 72 hours. But you look at just Brinson's athleticism, the way he can play a very, very credible center field. I mean, you know, we've seen a lot of sort of okay center fielders here, and he's someone who is solidly above average out there. And if you look at the numbers against left-handed pitching, even in the big leagues where, you know, the struggle has been pretty acute, he's been okay against left-handed pitching. And he just destroyed him at AAA this year. So obviously AAA pitching is not big league pitching. The parks are different. There's a slew of different circumstances there. But I think you're right. You know, if you have someone who is a platoon outfielder who can play center field, and produce against left-handed pitching, you know, there's some value there, and that's a puzzle piece that really can fit in a lot of different configurations depending on who else they go out and get or what that outfield looks like. Now, you know, they obviously have Luis Gonzalez, they have Mike Yastrzemski, they have, you know, a whole bunch of other guys on the left side, but I think, you know, we've seen some struggle now 2 years in a row from Yastrzemski against left-handed pitching. So, you know, maybe he's someone who's going to need a platoon partner going forward, and maybe Brinson could be that guy.
Yep, I like what I see with him. And why does he stand out? Because he's an athlete. He can run. He can do things. And they don't have anyone. That's all of a sudden we see a guy who can do that. It becomes exciting.
And I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to him yet, Marty, but the guy, I would use the word just gentleman. He's just a gentleman. He's just someone who I think you'll enjoy getting to know. And just someone who's you're very comfortable and easy to talk to from the get-go, and that's cool. You know, it's a neat opportunity for him. I think he's had to really persevere a lot. You know, had such a great opportunity to go home and be a Miami Marlin, and after he was traded in that very high-profile Christian Yelich deal, it just didn't happen for him there. And, you know, sometimes you get guys who have gone through and lost that prospect sheen, and they almost ease up a little bit because they're not supposed to be, you know, this capital G guy anymore. And now you're just making the best of what you can get out of your career. I think of Travis Ishikawa the second time around or Connor Gillespie the second time around. And sometimes mentally you get someone who's just in a better space to produce because they stop you know, they stop, I guess, tensing up so much or thinking, oh, the sand's going through the hourglass. I've got to get something done now. I got to show them now. So this is an opportunity that he's going to run with, and I'm sure they're going to give him quite a bit more playing time, and certainly while Austin Slater is out. So, you know, I think he's an easy guy to root for.
Yeah, I like it. And, you know, I want to go back to what we talked about the comfort zone. And I'm not saying it's wrong. This is what they do, and it turned into 107 wins, but it also can turn into 70 wins. So it's not that it's wrong, it's got to be done the other way, but that's what they like to do. So that's my point with that. So we can move on. Yeah, we can move on from that.
You want to talk about the rule changes at all, Marty?
Yes, absolutely. That's the next one, and I can't wait to get your feeling. I'll tell you one guy who probably had a good dinner and a glass of champagne last night. It's Mike Yastrzemski. Because this is going to change his life a little bit.
Well, it's going to affect people differently. You know, I did speak to Greg Johnson, the Giants chairman, yesterday, who was on the competition committee. I talked to Austin Slater as well. Giants were unique. They were one of two teams along with the Cardinals who were the only ones who had representatives from both the ownership side and player side on this committee. And even though the players voted against it, and they were powerless. They had 4 of 11 votes, so they could not block anything that the committee brought up for a vote. And Greg Johnson talked about that, and he was surprised at first. He thought they were really buttoned up and on the same page with everything and had this on the finish line. But then, you know, on reflection, he understood why the union would vote against it. But it doesn't mean that and you can read about that in the piece that I filed. But it's really interesting, some really interesting points that he made. But overall, the spirit of cooperation between the players and owners on this, I think, was notable. And the spirit of cooperation between, you know, a Giants player and a Giants owner on this was very notable. And I think they felt that they were in sort of common cause to try to, you know, basically smooth out the some of the ways that the game has gotten dulled down by, you know, teams that are basically, you know, running them and running the games like with an algorithm and creating baseball that has less action and moves at a slower pace. So, you know, it's not going to fix everything. I think it's not going to make none of these changes are overwhelming. It's not like, oh, no, now there's only eight people in the batting order, or now they're, you know, it's five pitches for a ball or something like that. I mean, the general rules are all the same. And if you ever look through the rule book, there's so much in there that's been added and layered on year after year after year. So this is just another you know, couple of pages in the rule book. And I don't think it's going to fundamentally alter the spirit of the game, but I think it is going to make the game move along better, and it's going to make the game more watchable and just reward athleticism and talent and make it about the players again, not make it about which front office has the smartest algorithm, because nobody cheers for algorithms, Marty. Nobody cheers for algorithms.
I can't even spell it, let alone cheer for it. So I agree with you. But yeah. This I will say, and Joe Maddon said this, that analytics, algorithms, whatever you want to call it, they're good for acquisitions. And I was thinking about the shift that we no longer will have the short right fielder. And I'll guarantee you the Giants will use the computer and find 1,000 players. And they're going to get the top 50 players who hit the ball through the hole into right field that normally would be an out that now will become a base hit. Just watch and see the kind of people they pick up this winter. It's going to be pull hitters who have a history of getting the ball in the right spot. That's why I say Yastrzemski or Belt become valuable.
Yeah, and you know, you're going to see teams adjust in different ways. And one thing that Theo Epstein said yesterday during the conference call to announce all of these rule changes is, you know, when you go through a static period without any major rule changes, it basically allows teams to kind of figure out what works, and then they all copy each other. And, you know, then you end up with a lot of basically a lack of diversity of thought because everyone is scheming the same way. So you throw in a bunch of rule changes and everyone is trying to figure out, well, how can we best sort of operationalize within the construct of these rules? And people are going to come at it in different ways. And in a way, you encourage more diversity of thought among front offices as well. And, you know, that short outfielder in right field that's taken away all those hits, who's to say one of the other outfielders doesn't become that short outfielder? Maybe you move the left fielder there and the center fielder shades toward left, you know, and you leave. You have a third baseman who's on the line now, so a ground ball, you know, won't get through. But if you're Joey Gallo, maybe you still have to deal with that short outfielder. We'll see. We'll see how teams kind of deploy their outfielders, because there's nothing in the rules about outfield shifts at all. So, yeah, you may see some interesting ways that teams try to solve around this, or try to still find ways to maximize their positioning. They're definitely going to do that for sure.
Very good point. That's a good point. And I guarantee you the Giants will be at the forefront of everything you just said. And that's why it's going to be an interesting offseason for them. One last thought for you. The ball club itself, what's the atmosphere like right now? You know, with all the hope, and boy, they had a good chance here in the second half to get back in the thing. San Diego, Milwaukee, the Phillies are falling over each other, and the Giants just couldn't get it done. What's the atmosphere like now?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, blowing bugles and getting ready to charge the field. I think everyone knows that this is a disappointing season, and they didn't accomplish anything near what they thought they would, or maybe assumed they would. And I think that, you know, that it hasn't dissolved into finger pointing. I will say that. And that is actually pretty remarkable, given just all that's been asked, especially of the starting pitchers and some of the, I really think it's almost disrespectful, to be honest, to a starting pitcher to have Yermín Mercedes play left field. I mean, it's just, I can't believe that we didn't hear either Alex Cobb or Logan Webb or Carlos Rodon or one of these guys just pop off and say, look, this is ridiculous. But, you know, they had to endure it. They did their best. They were pros. You ask someone like Cobb, he's like, well, yeah, after that fifth error, I still could have made a pitch to get out of that inning. It's like, buddy, don't hit any vital organs as you fall on your sword there, you know. But, you know, they really have been a very professional group. You know, I do think that there is some maybe frustration with roles here and there. You know, when it's not working, there's always going to be a little more consternation. And when it is working, you have 107-win season. So, you know, I think that overall, I think it's been a lot better than it could be under the circumstances. And I think that's just a testament to a lot of the professionals who are in that room.
Okay. All right. Very good. Andy, it's great having you on this morning. I know you're off to Northwestern and Duke. How is what's Northwestern? The Wildcats? What are they?
Oh, come on, Mari. Yes, we're the Wildcats. And they're playing Duke. Got a big win against Nebraska in Ireland 2 weeks ago. Okay. That was very exciting. Wish I could have been there. But they got an 11 a.m. kick, so I'll get to see at least a little football before I head back on the train and get back up for Giants Cup. So I know a lot of people, hopefully from the Bay Area, flown into Chicago, can take advantage of tomorrow's doubleheader. I mean, when can you see the Giants and 49ers mm-hmm. in the same day?
Fabulous.
Let alone in a different city, you know? So this is really a cool thing, I think. And hopefully the weather holds up. I know it's going to be a bit dicey tomorrow. But, Cubs and our Giants and Cubs at night, and then in the day you got Niners at Soldier Field against the Bears. So a lot of people are going to be doing a doubleheader tomorrow, but today will be my doubleheader.
Terrific. I'm so glad you can enjoy it. We don't even have a show tomorrow. We just come on for the talk back and Diamond Notes because the 49ers will be on KMBR tomorrow. So I get part of the day off tomorrow, which I like. I like that.
All right. Well, just tune on the radio and let Greg Papa do the talking.
Absolutely, in which he can do very well. San Francisco. All right. We love you, Pop.
Yes.
Hey, Andy, thank you so much for taking the time. Enjoy the day, and I can't wait to see you.
Thanks, Marty. Same here. Take care.
All right. Be well. All right. That is Andy Baggerly of The Athletic on this Saturday morning as we get ready for baseball. Bill is up next with Janie McCauley, who covers sports in the Bay Area for the Associated Press, does a great job. Very enthusiastic. So Bill talks with Janie McCauley right after.